Nyeh. What's up, Doc?
You're listening to the Movie Rob Minute Podcast.
Keep on listening, or I shall blow up the earth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 88 of Season 3 Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today on this lovely Wednesday morning in the beginning of November is Aaron Neuwirth of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. Welcome back to the show, Aaron.
Yo! That's my Theo.
Wait, you have to have a lot of like noise in the background if you're drilling.
In my mind, I'm visualizing all of it. I'm just having pure performance.
Hey, why not? If it works, that would be great. So minute 88 begins with Hans still, talking about all his political demands, and ends with Hans giving instructions to your main man, Theo. So yesterday we ended things with Hans beginning to mention his demands, the 7 members of this terrorist group and the 5 members of that terrorist group. And then he mentions he starts off here by saying in Sri Lanka, the 9 members of the Asian Dawn movement. And then we get a shot. Exactly. Well, at the same time, we get a shot of John who says, "What the fuck?" He clearly knows that there's something strange going on here. Unfortunately, he's one of the only people that actually has that impression of everything that's going on. And then the shot goes back and we see Carl, and Carl mouths to Hans, "Asian Dawn?
Heard about them in Time magazine."
Exactly. And then he puts the CV to his chest and goes, "I read about them in Time magazine." Now, why does he need to put the radio to his chest?
Habit.
You think it's just a phone? Because if you're pushing the button, so if you're not pushing the button on the CV, then you don't have to worry about someone hearing you. It's the fallacy. Exactly. It's the fallacy that people do it less today than they used to when people used to use real phones, or connected phones, wired phones, I guess you can say. Those points, people would put their phone, to their chest and assume that nobody can really hear them, even though you probably still can hear them. I don't really see people doing that with cell phones. Do you?
No, people don't talk on the phone. For one thing, people don't talk, people text. But when you do, you can, they have buttons, they can press mute and whatnot when they really feel the need to do that. Or they just don't care at all and they just start yelling, because plenty of times people are just yelling and you're hearing people yell all of a sudden to somebody else. And you're like, "What? Are you talking to me?" "No, he's talking to the other guy."
Yeah.
It happens.
Sure. It a lot of times looks like people are just talking to themselves all the time. When they're talking to their phones, you have people walking around with
earbuds,
and they're just talking. And you know, back in the 80s and 90s, if you saw people walking around doing that, you'd just say, "Okay, these people are just completely nuts." But nowadays, I think the nuts are the ones that don't do that. Like, what's wrong with you? You're actually talking into the phone. So. The Asian Dawn movement, obviously, is also a fake organization. It's based off the real Tamil Tigers.
Okay.
So, again, I don't know what the real connection is there between the names. I mean, the other two that we mentioned yesterday, the names were somewhat similar. Here, Asian Dawn and Tamil Tigers, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's a Sri Lankan group. Tamil's an Indian language.
No, that obviously. Yeah, for sure. No, but so then they'd say the Indian Dawn, movement or something like that,
I mean, that's just, that's just spitballing things.
Yeah, for sure.
Between writers, I mean, like, yeah, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's what it comes down to in most movies, the way the dialogue comes out is either, what you know, the writers decided to write down or what the actor changes. You know, I like the fact that Carl is confused here because it once again goes back to what we were talking about the other day, you know, that everything is compartmentalized here. Carl, even though he's privy to hear Hans's conversation now, has no idea what Hans has in mind with this speech. You know, apparently Carl is aware of the other two terrorist organizations, but he's not aware of the ones. Either he's not aware or he doesn't realize there's any type of connection.
I mean, I think he knows that the plan involves, like, you know, faking this thing to them for the sake of giving them stuff to do while they do their own thing. I'm sure the plan is just like, yeah, and then I'm going to call the police and tell them a bunch of, like, terrorist organizations that they need to, like, help us out with or something.
Right.
Carl's like, yeah, all right. I mean, I don't think he much, you know, it's not like he's asking, so which groups are you going to name that are in this fake plan that you have? I don't think he cares that.
No, for sure not. I don't think he cares either. I think the idea, though, is that here he's mentioning, you know, like, this is more for us to be able, for us to see that there's no rhyme or reason for anything of what he, you know, the names of the groups that he's mentioning here. You know, Hans did need to do a little bit of research, though, in order to know about these things, because he, you know, he's mentioning the number of people from each of these groups. And sure. I find it very funny that you know, the first group has 7 members, the second group has 5, and the third one has 9. So apparently terrorists only get caught in odd numbers.
Okay.
Well, how many terrorists are in this movie?
I don't know, 13.
13, there you go.
Well, there you go.
Lucky number 13. Even though on all the posters and everything, it says 12. It's just easier to say instead of saying a baker's dozen. You know, it's just...
I guess. Maybe they don't count Theo. I don't know.
Theo's not a real terrorist. Theo's just the computer guy.
Maybe they don't count him.
Could be. The computer guy who likes betting on whether they're going to shoot someone or not.
If you're working with the terrorists, you're part of the terrorists. I
mean, like, obviously.
There's no voucher.
Yes, obviously, Aaron. So he mentions Time Magazine. What do you know about Time Magazine?
Very popular magazine.
Do you know when it was first published?
That's a fun question. I mean, how old would it be? Is it late 1800s or is it like early 1900s?
Early 1900s.
Okay, so what, like 1915?
1923. March 3rd, 1923 was the first thing. So in just 5 months from now, they will have their 100th anniversary of when their first issue was published, which is pretty cool to think about.
I hope whichever Kardashian makes it onto the cover for that one is rewarded greatly.
Yeah. So one of the founder was a man named Henry Lucci, L-U-C-E. And you know,
it wasn't Dr. John Time Magazine.
Apparently not.
Or Time Timerson.
No, not this time.
Okay, fine.
And I mean, currently it's owned by Mark Benioff, B-N-E-I-O-F-F.
Yeah, Benioff.
Benioff, right? I mean, again, it's been a very popular magazine over the years. It used to be weekly, and now it's biweekly. Basically, they had a lot of, you know, Time. The most famous thing that Time magazine is known for is Man of the Year.
Person of the year.
Or person, sorry, excuse me, person of the year.
Right.
I remember as a kid, you know, I for a little while, like, you know, we used to get those things where you can get like magazine subscriptions for like really cheap, you know, for students and stuff like that. And I was interested in history and politics and current affairs and stuff like that. So I actually even got Time magazine. I had it for a few months. I never had time to read it because it was really boring.
Okay.
What I thought of.
Yeah, I don't have much experience with Time at all, so beyond just knowing it, you know.
Right. So at this point, Hans continues with his conversation on the walkie-talkie, And he goes, when these revolutionary brothers and sisters are free, the hostages in this building will be taken to the roof, and they will accompany us in helicopters to the Los Angeles International Airport, where they will be given further instructions. You have 2 hours to comply. So it's interesting that, you know, he's asking them to bring them helicopters and take them to LAX. And at this point, he says where they will be given further instructions. He's not saying where you will be given further instructions. So, like, what are the hostages? What type of instructions can they be given the hostages at that point?
Wouldn't it be to
run, run?
I mean, it's just phrasing at that point. But I mean, wouldn't it be to, like, presumably whoever flew them over to LAX?
Yeah. No, for sure. But it's just funny the way that it's phrased, where he says, "and they will be given further instructions." Again, sure. we're dissecting this, you know, word by word here. Every word counts.
It's all. I understand. That's all providing the logic. Like, I think I'm sure he's implying that the helicopter pilots and whoever's involved in transporting said hostages will be the ones that are given further right. instructions. If that was presuming that wasn't a bullshit plan.
Correct. And then. The response, well, first of all, so let's you're from LA. What do you know about LAX? The Los Angeles International Airport.
I mean, it's a very large international airport.
Okay, where is it located? I mean,
it's in El Segundo.
It's in where?
El Segundo.
Okay, well, it's located in, it says here, Westchester.
Okay.
No, I don't know. I don't know what
it all kind of blends together. There's Westchester, there's El Segundo, there's what Marina Bay or whatever. Like it's West LA, like it's Southwest mm-hmm. LA area.
Okay, so how many passengers do you think go through the airport on a yearly basis?
Through LAX on a yearly yes. basis.
The stats I have is from 2019.
A couple trillion?
No, only 88 million.
Okay.
And it is the world's third busiest airport, and the U.S. is second busiest airport. So which airport do you think in America is busier?
Busier than yeah. LAX? Dallas?
See, my guess would have been O'Hare, but unfortunately, the real answer is Atlanta.
Atlanta, there we go. Yeah, that's a huge one.
Yeah. Well, apparently, if it's busier than LAX,
well, the one in Texas is like its own state. Like, that's why I figured they might be that one.
Yeah, it could be.
it's like I'm serious. It's like it's bigger than Rhode Island. Like it's a huge airport.
Is it really?
It's very big. Like it probably has a bigger population than Rhode Island.
And, well, if it is, it depends if you count passengers as population.
Sure, yeah. I'm just saying, it's a huge airport, and it's a pretty big hub. So, but yeah, Atlanta is too, so that's not surprising.
Right. I mean, the area that they chose to build it on was a 640-acre field. Okay. It's probably grown since then. Do you know what year they started building LAX?
30s?
1926. You're close. Yeah, close. It opened in 1928. So let's see. Now, why is it the LAX? Why do you think they added the X to it?
Convenience. Place to exchange people. And as a kind of a hub of the world, since LA, I don't know.
Okay, well, originally each airport had a two-letter abbreviation, so it was just known as LA.
Oh, so there's
right, and then in the 1940s, late 1940s, they started having a lot more airports, and to the where they wanted to expand it Louisiana. To three letters, and LA had no other letter to add to it, so someone just randomly suggested adding X to it, and that's.
Yeah, that's convenience, like I said. That's exactly what it is.
Exactly. So our good friend Robinson decides to respond and says, wait a minute, Mr. Gruber. This is crazy. I don't have the authority. I can't authorize. 2 hours is not enough. And then Hans cuts off the transmission between the two of them. So once again, you know, we see the fact that our good friend Dwayne T. Robinson is stuttering. He's not a negotiator. He can't even respond properly with the...
I mean, nobody would. I mean, like, this is not much to do with that when you're like, you have 2 hours to comply to this exact thing, and then you cut him off before he has a chance to respond to it. I mean, there's not much you can do in that scenario. Like, I can empathize with a situation like that as far as being thrown into some kind of even crazier fire than you've already been in, and like having nothing to offer.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, he continues to talk after the transmission is cut off. He goes, "Hello, hello, Danny, did you get all that? Let's go. We got to make some calls."
Yeah, gotta make some calls.
Who does he gotta make calls to?
The UN? I don't know.
Like, who do you think can approve the release of these prisoners? I mean, they obviously they don't need to, but they never mentioned where these prisoners are being held. So, you know, are they all in American prisons? Are they in, you know, prisons in different places around the world? You know. So the idea of only giving them 2 hours to deal with this, it shows the absurdity and the impossibility of it right from the start. You know, because as we know, Hans doesn't care. You know, let them take as long as they want or as little as they want. You know, he knows they're, you know, by giving them 2 hours, he knows they're not going to be able to meet that deadline anyway. So, you know. And then we cut back to Hans and Carl, and the question is asked, do you think they'll even try to do it? And Hans goes, who cares? Okay. So, I mean, it shows that Carl is more aware of what's going on. I wonder if the rest of the terrorists are aware that this is what they're looking for. You know, that this is part of the plan.
I mean, there's only so many of them involved in this operation. I don't think they're completely blind to what's taking place. They might not know every single step, but I don't think that they're in the, you know, being left in the lurch as far as certain overall goals that there might
be. Okay.
Like, I mean, because one thing that's, you know, they can't do certain things about having this kind of knowledge, like as far as where things are going from here and everything. Like, they have to be in the know to some degree. But I mean, yes, I don't disagree as far as Hans is letting people know what they need to know. But I don't think that, you know, again, a fairly small group of, you know, bank robbers essentially are entirely ignorant to, you know, certain steps of this plan.
Sure.
Because you need to have some kind of control. Like, if they don't know anything, then it's like, so what am I supposed to do again? Like, that's not the kind of operation he's running.
Right. But do you think and. I mean, obviously, this is completely speculation. Do you think that you know, he like put an ad out for, you know, and Terrorists Are Us to try and get people to join his group, or is it, you know,
I know there's a half joking phrase when you say that, but honestly, yes. I mean, they're mercenaries. That's exactly what you do. You hire people that are not going to ask questions. That can
no, but jump. But are they? That's maybe there are already people that he knows that he's worked with in the past.
I'm sure they got vouched for. Like, I'm sure that there's a, you know, he didn't just hire people based on a
one resume. There's no Mr. Orange here.
I'm sure there are either people I'm sure that there's people he either knows or knows through somebody, but they are at the end of the day mercenaries. I mean, they're not terrorists, right? They're not there for a political cause or a religious ideology in some form or whatever. They're there because they want money. Like, that's the bottom line. And so I'm sure wherever he got them from, he says he's professional. He's a professional thief. He hired other professionals. There's not a Craigslist.
Maybe there is for this. But maybe we just didn't know about it.
That's what I'm saying though. I'm sure there's some kind of underground network that he went through to get the people that he felt would be good for this job.
Yeah.
If he didn't besides like someone like Carl, who probably is, you know, known for a better part of his life or something like that. Like, those people, sure. Those are his people. Cool. Then he hired, you know, Al Jiang and like that one white guy that's at the reception. Like,
Eddie.
Those people are, yeah, yeah. and like Theo, like, you know, people that he got recommendations for or whatnot.
But maybe there was a Craigslist for mercenaries at the time. You never know. You know, have you ever seen the movie The Contender by Rod Lurie, right? So there's the idea that one of the characters put an ad in a magazine, you know, like a Soldier of Fortune magazine, you know, looking to hire someone to do a job. So maybe it works that way there also. You know?
It could.
Yeah. So at this point, then Hans changes he then starts talking to Theo, which again, doesn't he, you know, actually goes back to what you said earlier, that he must switch the frequency so that nobody will see what he's talking.
Exactly. I'm telling you, they're switching channels. You don't need to pronounce it in the screenplay to make it clear. Sometimes you just have to take an assumption.
Right, but does he doesn't press any buttons on a code or anything like that, does he?
I mean, there's editing. I mean, you know, there's jumps in time.
Actually, he does. Oh my god! If you look at it, okay. One second. If you look at him at second 45, okay, what he does is he turns to the side, and then you see him lower the CV, and then you see his other hand, and it looks as if he's actually tapping something into the radio. So therefore, he's either putting in a code, or he's changing the frequency. Okay, but we know that John is able to listen in on this because John has, you know, a radio that's already had the code punched in, you know, unlike in the next movie, which takes him a while to get one of those. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, make sure you punch in the code before you kill him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he lifts the radio to his mouth and goes, "Theo, are we on schedule?" And Theo responds, "One more to go. Then it's up to you, and you better be right, because it looks like this last one's going to take a miracle." And then Hans gives his famous line from the movie, "It's Christmas, Theo. It's the time of miracles. So be a good cheer and call me." And then he gets cut off when he does it. I love the way the inflection that Rickman uses here. You know, because he goes from sounding cold-blooded to sounding, you know, cheerful.
Yeah.
You know, he's a friendly boss.
I mean, which makes me think all the more reason he's not going to just leave everybody in the lurch. He has a plan that's going to reward everyone handsomely. And even though McClane is irritating him, I still think he, from his perspective, the things are still working the way he wants them to.
Right.
A few more deaths than anticipated, but
right. Now my question here is that Theo has said that he's not done yet. So Hans should have theoretically already known this, because Hans needs to know at what point he should start, you know, lighting the fire under the police to get things moving. Because his whole plan is that, you know, the police are going to get in over their heads. They're going to bring in the FBI, and then the FBI are going to do their textbook plan, and that's what's going to, you know, have them eventually turn off the electricity. Okay? But Hans needs to plan this well enough, because if they turn off the electricity before Theo finishes with the last one, he's got a big problem.
I think Hans is aware to a degree as far as when the FBI are showing up. Like, I think he knows that they're not – if they were there – he'd be talking to him on the radio. He's not. And as far as asking where Theo is, I think he already has an idea of where Theo is. He's just, he wants Theo to tell him where he is.
Okay. But he also doesn't know. Theo gave an approximation of how long it's going to take for each of the various locks to get through.
Which I think they've already worked out ahead of time. It's just more of a progress report. Like, I think in his mind, it's like, this is how the plan's supposed to be going. Presumably, there's nothing that stopped Theo, so he's going to be where I want him to be at this time. He's just more checking in to make sure that everything's going to plan. That's my assumption.
It's not about
him being unaware of where things are. It's just more of, presumably, this is what should be happening right now. So let me talk to Theo, make sure this is what's happening.
Right. So basically, what you're saying is that Hans knows everything that's going on, but he wants to hear. He wants to be told.
Yeah, exactly. He wants to make sure that the things that he has meticulously planned for are happening the way they're supposed to be happening right now.
Okay, that makes sense.
I mean, as opposed to not talking to him and then, like, something happened and he didn't know about it. Like, he knows about it.
Exactly. All right, do you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
No.
Okay. So the script, once again, has a few minor discrepancies. The first one is something that we discussed earlier, okay, where Hans says that the helicopter will take them to the LAX, and in the script it says where you will be given further instructions, as opposed to they. So then that really makes me wonder why, you know, what was, do you think it was, just a flub on Alan Rickman's part, but the take was so good that they decided just to keep it?
Probably, or just, you know, the moment got away from him, or it's just he doesn't care. So it's like that's in his character to not really be concerned.
No, but you'd think that the director would care more.
Yes, but in terms of Alan Rickman thinking of who's Hans right now, feels he's complete control, and he knows he's spinning this, you know, made up plan that he needs to have happen. I'm not saying he's directly looking at, you know, articles and the lines and being like, I should change this one specifically just to make a point. But I do think if, you know, being an actor lost in your role, I can imagine him not being concerned with, like, you know, dialing it exactly to the screenplay and being more like, this is how this guy would say this to communicate his plan.
That makes sense. And the then Robinson's response in the movie is, wait a minute, Mr. Gruber, this is crazy. I don't have the authority. I can't authorize. 2 hours is not enough. In the script, it says 2 hours. Are you insane? I can't authorize. Hello? Hello? Meaning he hangs up on him, you know, in the middle of him talking. And then Carl says to Hans, do you think they'll even try to do it? Which is, you know, the same thing. And Hans just, it says he shrugs and goes, eh, who cares? So, you know, it works the same way. And then it says in the script that he switches the channel on the radio before he talks to Theo. And then it says, Theo and Christoph have been rewarded with another lock deactivated. And then Theo responds, one more to go, then it's up to you. The graphic on his screen flashes, warning, electromagnetic seal armed. So according to the script, he actually did just do that, because once the electromagnetic seal is armed, that means he got through all of them. Okay. And then the dialogue stays the same, and you better be right, because this one's going to take a miracle. It's Christmas, Theo. It's a time of miracles, so be of good cheer and call me. So that's pretty much how that ends. So every Wednesday, we have a segment called Hans Hump Day, where my guests will give their top five Alan Rickman performances. So what have you got for us this time, Aaron?
Okay, my top five Alan Rickman performances. Number five, I have Sense and Sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to be followed by He's Great In It, is pretty much my response to all these things. But number four is Dogma, as the Metatron. I think he handles Kevin Smith's dialogue quite well. Number three is Snape, but specifically Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, just because you get a lot of context involving him. It's just a fine showcase for, you know, a performance that's already been pretty iconic as far as that series goes. My number two is Galaxy Quest, which rules. It's hysterical. Everybody's really good in it. He's great in it as the fed up actor who can't deal with Tim Allen and everybody else, but still goes on with the show anyway. And he gets to wear the makeup the whole time, which is great. And number one is Die Hard, easily. He's Hans Gruber for life, which unfortunately was ended.
Which is, it's still ironic that this was his very first movie role.
It became just an instant iconic, you know, role. He's tremendous in it. It's a wonderful performance. Honorable mention, I have Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. I'm not a fan of that movie much at all, but I mean, he's just hamming it up, doing Hans Gruber in medieval times, so can't complain too much about the performance, even though that movie sucks. So, there you go.
Oh, come on, you get Christian Slater.
That's the name you pull? It's like, but defend the movie.
No, I'm kidding. Well,
you know, Christian Slater.
No, first of all, the movie does have a great cast. Yeah.
It has a lot of people and Costner.
It's true. But yes, he stands out the most.
I'm not a Costner fan.
No question, Ron.
Alan Rickman stands out. Yes, he does. He's great.
All right. You want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can find more of my work at thecodazeek.com. That's my personal blog where all my movie stuff ends up. I host a podcast, Out Now with Aaron and Abe, with my friend Abe. We talk about weekly movie releases. I write for We Live Entertainment for my movie reviews and Why So Blue for my Blu-ray and Criterion reviews. And I'm on Twitter, Aaron's PS4.
All right. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcast you might be using to listen to this show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on Facebook. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.